The next case up for argument is case number 2016-551. Board of Education of the Columbus City School District et al. Versus Franklin County Board of Revision for the appellant, Network Restorations. Mr. Pirtle?
Yes, sir.
We're splitting up 9 minutes and 6 minutes for Mr. Snyder. I'd like to take 7 minutes and save two for rebuttal, please.
Very well.
All right. Thank you so much. What we're asking the court to do is to reverse the BTA decision and value the property according to the property owner's appraisal. Property is 101 rental units, residential rental units in Franklin County. The property operates as a low-income housing tax credit project, but it also receives the Section 8 SUD subsidies. The owner filed a decrease complaint with the Board of Revision, presented their appraiser, and the Board of Revision found value consistent with the owner's appraisal with a minor modification for the capitalization rate. Board of Education filed the appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals, presented their own appraisal. Their appraiser used the actual rent, which was 93% the HUD subsidy, 7% the tenant paid LIHTC. Board of Tax Appeals found value consistent with the Board of Education's appraisal, so the property owner appealed here. We believe that there are numerous problems with the Board of Tax Appeals decision, and that's why it should be reversed. The Board of Tax Appeals sets forth in its ruling several statements of law, but the decision is inconsistent with those statements. The Board of Tax Appeals decision states that the affirmative value of Section 8 subsidies should be disregarded. However, the Board of Education's appraiser valued the property using the Section 8 subsidies. That's what he used, the actual rent. So that statement is inconsistent with the Board of Tax Appeals ruling. The Board of Tax Appeals also stated that the additional benefit of federal government subsidies should not inflate the value of the property over market rents. At the Board of Tax Appeals hearing, the property owner presented the testimony of Don Miller, appraiser. He prepared four memorandums. His memorandums C and D discussed the restricted rent and the market rent. Miller set forth that the market...
Can I stop you there?
Sure.
When you say market rent, do you mean... I guess I'd like to understand what you mean when you say market rent.
Sure.
Is that comparable LIHTC properties, properties that aren't receiving any sort of subsidy and aren't LIHTC restricted?
Okay.
Just like to some precision and
okay. Yes, sir. Mr. Miller prepared two memorandums, one dealing with LIHTC market and one dealing with market. And they're very similar.
When you say market, okay. You mean not LIHTC?
Not LIHTC market, right.
Okay.
Right. I'm sorry. I'll try to be more precise.
No, that's fine.
Okay. And they were very similar. They were within 2% of each other. Miller went into detail in his memorandums and his testimony about the LIHTC properties competing in the same market as the non-LIHTC properties and why the rental revenues were similar in both properties, both types of properties. So the Board of Tax Appeals stated that these subsidies are properly taken into account so long as they do not elevate the value over that which would be in the conventional market. And because the fact that the Board of Education's appraiser used rent of $77,500 a month, and because the LIHTC market rent was about $55,500 a month, the market rent was about $56,500 a month, about $1,000 more. The Board of Education appraiser used a rent that was about 138% above market. So therefore, even though the Board of Tax Appeals said that the subsidies are taken into account so long as they do not elevate the value above conventional market, the appraisal did elevate the value above conventional market. Board of Tax Appeals also stated that in the absence of some evidence that the subject property is receiving rents above conventional market rents, we find Sprout's analysis more accurately values the subject property on tax lien date. However, there is not an absence of evidence the property is receiving rents above market. There is evidence the property is receiving rents above market. Miller's testimony and his two memorandums clearly show that the rent that the Board of Education's appraiser used is well above market. There were other problems with the Board of Education appraisal. He stated that in-place rents were market rents through a rent study that he had no knowledge of. He'd never seen this market study, but he was relying upon it. He couldn't testify to it. The property is a LIHTC property. The Woda case says that LIHTC restrictions must be taken into account. I don't believe that the Board of Education's appraiser took the LIHTC restrictions into account in any manner. He just used the actual rent, actual expenses. Mr. Sprout also states in his appraisal report, the client has requested we value the property in this manner, citing BTA case 2011-714. That BTA hearing was August of 2015. Now, on May 11, 2017, this court issued a decision, 2017 Ohio 2734, reversing the BTA decision that the BOE appraiser was relying upon in using his finding his value, his methodology evaluation. And in that case, 2017 Ohio 2734, Network Restorations 3 is the title of the case, this court stated, WOTA does not require an actual rent income approach. However, that's what the Board of Education's appraiser did in the instant case.
And that case was another Network Restorations property. Is the property at issue here and the property at issue there operated functionally in the same manner with
very similarly? Yes, sir. Okay. Yes. Yeah, very similar. The decision this board issued also said that the income approach, that the income approach should use market rents and expenses rather than actual rents. However, in the instant case, the Board of Education appraiser did use actual rents. This court stated government subsidies should not be taken into account in a way that would increase the value of the property. We believe that the Board of Education's appraisal methodology did increase the value of the property. And again, yes, as you state, as you ask, Network Restorations 3, very similar to the instant case. LIHTC, Housing Assistant Payment, HUD, and Miller used market rents in that case, and this court found value consistent with the Miller appraisal. In paragraph 23 of that case, this court stated, in this case, the BOR adopted the owner's appraisal, which the BTA rejected on erroneous legal grounds. Because the appraisal formed the basis for the BOR's reduced valuation, we have no compunction in restoring the decision as a proper finding of fact. That's what we're asking this court to do. In the instant case, the Board of Revision found value consistent with the property owner's appraisal. The BTA rejected that, and we're asking, because the BTA unlawfully rejected the owner's appraisal and found value consistent with the Board of Education appraisal, we're asking this court to reinstate the property owner's appraisal's value.
Before you sit down, I know you filed a notice of additional authority with the Notestein case.
Yes.
Did you have any input on how that case might apply on these facts? If you don't, that's fine, but...
Notestein, capital advance, very similar to LIHTC, it's upfront money. Capital advance, you get money up front. LIHTC, you get money up front. And then severely restricted rents. And the Notestein case said, the contract rent approach is appropriate when contract rents do not exceed generally available market rents. And in this case, the contract rents would be the LIHTC rents, but because there are HUD rents as well, it's not apples to apples. But in this case, Miller did calculate the LIHTC market rent. Also states, case law requires a market rent approach when federal subsidies would inflate the property's value. And in the instant case, the federal subsidies did inflate the property's value, so a market approach should be used, which is what the property owner's appraiser did use. Okay. Thank you so much.
Mr. Snyder.
Good morning, Master Commissioner, and may it please the court.
Morning.
I am Mark Snyder here representing the amici parties, Ohio Capital Corporation for Housing, Ohio Housing Council, the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and five other groups that are involved in low-income housing. We're involved in this case to support the appellant, which is the property owner Network Restorations 1, LLC. We believe the appellant is advocating the correct way to value the type of affordable housing at issue here by using a LIHTC market approach. My clients are interested in this case because collectively they're involved in hundreds of LIHTC and other types of affordable housing properties throughout Ohio. Because property taxes can be among the biggest obstacles to developing and operating affordable housing, the amici are vitally concerned that real property values are set appropriately. The amici simply want to ensure that the court continues to recognize that not all affordable housing is the same factually, especially because property valuation appeals like this will no longer be directly heard by the court in most situations. Unlike in at least 9 other states that do not tax affordable housing at all or tax it at lower rates, Ohio does tax affordable housing, and that's okay. We're not asking for an exemption or any kind of special treatment. We are advocating, however, that the court continue to recognize that true value is a constitutional principle in the Ohio Constitution, and it requires different methodologies in different situations because of the important differences in facts. In our amicus brief, we set forth 3 main operational scenarios that exist for affordable housing in Ohio. We set forth what we believe the rule should be in each of those situations based upon precedent and logic. Now, the court has issued 2 important decisions since we wrote our brief, Network Restorations 3 and Notestein Manor. While the court in those cases clarified some of the issues that we discuss in our brief, the court does apply the same logic in those cases as we advocate for here today and in our brief. As I said, our brief has 3 important different situations that I'd like to briefly discuss. Situation 1 is affordable housing with rent subsidies that cause the total amount received to exceed market rents. And by market, I mean your traditional housing apartments that anybody can live in with no kind of LIHTC or other subsidies, your typical housing. As the court noted in Network Restorations 3 and in Alliance Towers and Canton Towers, those properties should be valued using some kind of market approach. The court has repeatedly recognized that it's necessary to strip off the subsidies that take the total amount received above market. We agree with that. Briefly, Situation 2 is housing with deeply restricted rents, whereby restrictive covenants cause the controlling rents to be below market. There is no affirmative value of subsidies. The total amount received is way below market. Those should continue to be valued, capitalizing the actual net income, like the court recognized in Notestein Manor. Many rural development, HUD 202, and some LIHTC properties are in that situation. Today we are faced with Situation 3, which is a twist on Situation 1. It's a LIHTC property, as Mr. Pirtle discussed, that has subsidies that take the rent above market.
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Sure.
So for a LIHTC property, does that set essentially a ceiling on the amount of rental revenue that's coming into that property?
It does.
Okay.
Yep. And that could be paid partly by the tenant, partly with subsidies, but there's a ceiling. We think that the use of the LIHTC market approach, which would look at LIHTC properties' incomes and comparable LIHTC properties' expenses, is the proper approach that harmonizes all of the different rules that we've discussed.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So if you're advocating a market approach, that, and when you say market, you mean non-LIHTC, non-subsidized, how do you reconcile that statement with Mr. Miller's consideration of comparable LIHTC properties? That seems to be sort of a tension between those two.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm talking about a LIHTC market. That is what I'm advocating for, the same thing that Mr. Pirtle is talking about. It's a type of market. You do appraisal technology. You go out and you look at comparable properties. So you are looking to a market, but the market that you're considering are other LIHTC properties, not market rent properties. So in that case, it's not actual rent. It's looking to a specific type of market. The type of market is comparable LIHTCs. We think that's required under the WODA Ivy Glen case and under Revised Code Section 5713.03. In WODA Ivy Glen, the court said that government encumbrances enacted under police powers have to be considered. And so for years after 2012, regardless of what the court was saying about WODA Ivy Glen and Network Restorations 3, the statute itself requires that the use and rent restrictions that are put on LIHTC property be considered. The way we think that that would work would be by looking to comparable LIHTC properties when valuing these types of properties. Thank you.
For the Board of Education, Ms. Allison.
Thank you. Good morning, I'm Kim Allison, and I'm here this morning on behalf of the Board of Education of the Columbus City School District. I think we need to take a step back in this case and look at the big picture. The burden of proof advocated for by the property owner in their brief is the incorrect burden of proof. In the notice of appeal, they argue that this case should be judged under an unreasonable and unlawful standard. However, this case does not involve a legal issue, it's a factual issue. The Board of Tax Appeals had two competing appraisal reports before it. It found one to be more probative than the other. As this court recently clarified in the Notestein case, if there is no legal error, this court reviews the BTA's decision concerning the weight of appraisal evidence under the highly deferential abuse of discretion standard. Further, this court has consistently held that it does not sit as a super BTA or a trier of fact de novo. Therefore, the property owner is required to prove, or the appellant is required to prove, that the Board of Tax Appeals abused its discretion in relying on Mr. Sprout's appraisal report.
Well, is it a problem for your case in these last pair of cases, the network restorations and the Notestein Manor case, which seems to stress market, and I think in Notestein Manor they said the preference for market is presumptive and your appraiser did actuals. So that might not be a totally factual issue. It might be a departure from the governing legal standards.
We would argue, actually, that the most recent cases actually help us.
Okay.
In the Notestein case, they say that while the market rent is preferable, that a contract rent approach is also acceptable. It's not, you know, the preference for market rent is not conclusive. And that it is... Contract rents may be appropriate when the contract rents do not exceed the market rents. Market rents meaning non-subsidized market. So we believe that actually Mr. Sprout's contract approach in this case was preferable because the contract rents did not exceed the market rents.
I thought the memorandum D that he alluded to showed that when you add in the subsidies, it perhaps exceeds what might be commanded in the market.
Okay, so
response to that?
I do. And here's the problem with Mr. Miller's report. First of all, it was submitted the day of the Board of Tax Appeals hearing. We objected, the BTA overruled, so we had no opportunity to look at that in advance. Also, he determined his market rents by looking at 10 market comparables. Most of them were garden-style apartments, and he took an average. This court has held that that is a completely inappropriate way to determine a market rent because it makes no adjustments for the differences in the properties. The subject property is a 101 scattered site. It involves single family dwellings, duplexes, townhomes, and garden apartments. Mr. Miller made no adjustment to that. So not only are the market rents not in the record, but the contract rents are not in the record. And we know what the total income was, but the HAP contract's not in the record. So there's nothing in this record that says these one-bedroom units rent for X amount per month.
Well, we know what the tenant pays and what the subsidy is, so maybe we could back into it, right? And then your appraiser rely on their appraiser for the factual information, so
We would just argue that you can't prove that the contract rents cause the market rents to be above market when you fail to prove the contract rent and the market rent. I mean, even if you look at Mr. Miller's rent roll, there's a line that says market rent, then there's a line that says paid for by the tenant, and then total rent. And it's unclear, but if you compare those two numbers, it appears that the only difference between those are an allowance for utilities. And landlords routinely make an allowance for utilities, so you can't really argue that that portion of the rent caused it to be above market because we just don't know what the rents are. I mean, they have the burden of proof. And the record's just completely unclear. I mean, I would argue that even the amici recognize that the record in this case is, you know, lacking by their argument that the case should be remanded to cure the evidentiary defects. I mean, there's just nothing in this record to support the arguments advanced by the property owner. So we would argue that Sprout did properly appraise the property in compliance with current legal standards using actual income, even under the most recent Network Restorations 3 and Notestein case. In this case, the Section 8 subsidies do not need to be excluded unless they cause the contract rent to be above market. I mean, there's a portion of appellant's brief that argues that just merely receiving the subsidies is enough and that capitalizing the subsidies is incorrect, but that's not true. This court has made it clear that the subsidy only creates an affirmative benefit if it causes the contract rent to be above the market rent.
I think it's a problem that the BTA did not even discuss any of these memorandums. I mean, we've said repeatedly in cases that the BTA has a duty to engage in a sufficient discussion of the evidence to allow us to discern whether their decision was reasonable and lawful. And I know you might have a problem with their presentation on the day of the hearing and not having an opportunity to review it. But if this case is as factually messy as you say it is, I don't see anything in the decision that's analyzing this evidence.
They did not. I would argue that that's because they also found them to be non-probative. I mean, they discussed Mr. Miller's report. None of those memorandum were part of his report. They were prepared after his report. So I think that they just did their job of evaluating the conflicting appraisal reports and found Mr. Sprout's report to be more probative. And the appellant has failed to prove that they abused their discretion in making that determination. I think another important point that we need to stress is there's no such thing as a market LIHTC rent. That is not a term that is defined anywhere in appraisal terminology. I believe it's something that was just made up by Mr. Miller, honestly. And I think the reason for that is because no two LIHTC properties are the same. If you look at the subject property, and I have the restrictions, 21% of the subject units were restricted to 35% of the AGMI, 23 to 40%, and 56 to 45%. But if you look at Mr. Miller's comps, none of them had similar restrictions. There, for three of them, he didn't even list restrictions at all. So if you're going to compare one LIHTC property to another, the restrictions would have to be exactly the same. Otherwise, the maximum rent levels could never be the same. So it's our position that there is no such thing as a market LIHTC rent.
You think that's a violation of law to consider those and developing an opinion of value? Or
I think that it is not.
It might not be a term of art, but
I think it's not an appropriate appraisal methodology. I mean, I've never, it's not defined anywhere as far as I am aware of in any of the, you know, the real estate guides or any of the appraisal practice books. So I it's just something that was made up for this case.
Maybe it's an apples to apples comparison?
Sure. I mean, and I guess if you did have a LIHTC property that had exactly the same restrictions, maybe then you could consider it, but that's not what we have in this case at all. And again, I just want to briefly address that both of the appellant and amici have requested that this case be remanded, and we think that is completely inappropriate method to resolve the case. The property owner had two separate opportunities to submit evidence to establish the contract and market rents in this case, and they elected not to. Clearly, they make an argument that this may be defining a new legal standard, but they're the party advocating that the subsidies cause the market rents contract rents to be above market. Surely they should have had to anticipate establishing what the contract and market rents were in order to make that, to make their case.
When they went to the BTA, they were the appellee, right?
So they were. They were. But they were, well, they had seen our appraisal report. They knew the, I mean, we timely disclosed our evidence. So they were aware of, I mean, right. But they were still advocating for the market LIHTC rent, even at the Board of Revision. And also, I just want to briefly address, you know, Mr. Sprout testified that in his professional opinion, he was able to rely upon the actual income for the property as market because HUD does a market study every 5 years to determine the rents for HUD properties. So in his opinion, that was sufficient for him to establish that the subject rents were market rents. So if you don't have any further questions, that's all I have.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Pirtle. You have a minute and 2 seconds.
Thank you so much. As far as the standard of review, this court stated in the Network Restorations 3 case, in this appeal, however, we review the BTA's determination that Miller did not appraise the property in compliance with the legal standards set forth in the earlier cases. This is a legal issue. I believe that is the situation here today. It is a legal issue, not just a factual issue. As far as Miller's testimony regarding market rent, his Exhibit C dealt with restricted rent, weighted average rent, and market rent, and Exhibit D was strictly discussed market rent. So he provided memorandums and testimony to state, here's what the LIHTC market rent is, here's what the market rent is, and I think it's very clear. Board of Education's attorney doesn't believe that it's adequate, but that's a, I guess that's a decision this court will have to make. I think that that's why Mr. Miller put these memorandums together, because there was a presumption that the law seemed to be evolving. There were some cases coming out of the Board of Tax Appeals that we thought were questionable, so we wanted to make it real clear how he appraised the property, why he did what he did, and I think these memorandums did that. I think the big issue is the WOTA case states that the low-income housing tax credit restrictions have to be taken into account. We don't believe that the Board of Education's appraiser took them into account. Miller took them into account. He didn't just use a market approach. He didn't use actual. He came up with LIHTC market, what we believe apples-to-apples approach, the best way to appraise the property. And he, so Miller did take the LIHTC restrictions into account as directed to by WOTA. I mean, if you just use straight market, you're not taking the LIHTC restrictions into account. If you use actual rent, you're not really taking the LIHTC restrictions into account. Miller tried to comply with WOTA in preparing his appraisal report.
Before you sit down, I just had a factual question. I see your lights on. These rent subsidies, I might be using the term of art incorrectly, but the Section 8, are these, your amicus got into this in their brief about project-based subsidy or a tenant-based, are these the subsidies that are received at this property, are these project-based?
Yes, these are project-based, yes,
okay,
sir.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, the case will be submitted and you will be advised of our decision.